Welcome to Church Drunk, a spirited conversation about faith, reason, and libations. We are here in the midst of Holy Week. There are some warnings that go along with our podcast.
You need to know.
And Holy Week. Yeah, there are some warnings about Holy Week. Beware of cursy podcast broadcasters like us. Mm-hmm. And also weirdos that like to walk long distances on their knees or be crucified. Not us. Spoiler alert, not us. So if you're not of the cursy drinky persuasion, it might not be the best time for you. You go find your little chapel and pray your Stations of the Cross however you
well
please.
Scrape your knees as you will.
Yeah. We are Catholic. You don't have to be. Welcome to Church Drunk. And I am Guess here with my co-host Diz. And
hi.
Diz, what are you drinking?
Well, in honor of Holy Thursday, which is the day when we celebrate the washing of the feet from John's Gospel.
Lovely. I thought, lovely reading.
Yes, it's beautiful. Yeah. Everybody else has the Lord's Supper, but John yeah. starts with dirty feet. And yeah. I'm embracing that because I have the dirtiest of dirty martinis
yes.
here in front of me. That's how I unite with Jesus's example of service.
Yeah, you know? A dirty martini.
Start with a dirty martini.
In honor of the dirty feet.
Yeah.
But, funny coincidence, because I'm drinking spikenard.
Spikenard. That sounds disgusting.
Favorite word from that gospel reading. And then she comes in and she breaks the jar and there's precious spikenard on Jesus's feet. No, I'm not drinking spikenard. I don't even know what that is. But I'm drinking probably the next best thing.
Yeah, what do you have?
In addition to being the midst of Holy Week for Catholics and Christians and whatnots, we are on the eve of Passover for our Jewish brethren.
Shout out.
So I went with a bitter herbs cocktail.
Nice.
I just took everything bitter off the shelf. I'm kind of continuing my bitter bender from the post-Christmas time. Yeah.
How long have you been sitting on that one?
No, I had all the bitters and I was like, I'm on a bitter bender.
Yeah.
So now I've got gin, I've got green chartreuse, I've got a dash of bitters, I've got plenty of bitter herbs in my glass.
That's
to be
a
ready
really
for
holy
Passover.
Drink,
isn't
I
it?
Feel.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And aren't
they
Jewish
all?
Of you. Well,
yeah.
True.
Yeah.
Here at Church Drunk, all alcohols were created equal
yes.
in the eyes of the Lord.
True.
But
so
we
it's,
like to drink liturgically. So.
We do, yeah. Yeah. Cheers.
Hey, cheers.
Yeah.
Happy Holy Thursday. Things mm-hmm. haven't gotten horrible yet.
Not yet.
Not
so
yet.
It is, well, I mean, you might make an argument that starting yesterday, things got pretty horrible, right? Spy Wednesday, honoring Judas or just commemorate, not honoring, you don't honor Judas. What do you do with Judas?
You're remembering his betrayal.
Yeah. Yeah. Commemorating.
Not even commemorating.
Just
that
put
has
in,
like an honorific attachment, I feel.
You take out the dunce cap like once a year
right.
and you go, wow, look at this guy.
It's a great day to think about how you are kind of a Judas.
Yeah.
You know, it's very penitential.
Yeah. So starting...
Like, how much would you sell Jesus out for? That's the first question you want to think about.
And I always was a bit confused by the fact that we have Spy Wednesday,
mm-hmm.
where you do the reading of the Last Supper, and you, like, you know, Judas and 30 pieces of silver, and, you know, he who dips in my dish, and all that kind of stuff. And then you have Holy Thursday, which is actually commemorating the Last Supper. So we really do, like, 2 days of Last Supper.
Well, and I think partly because, like, you focus on the washing of the feet
more
on Holy Thursday, at least, like, in parishes, like, usually that's
yeah.
the liturgy. That's what's going to happen. Pope Francis was
mm-hmm.
washing people's feet. The popes, you know, always do.
Yeah.
But, you know, just kind of sidebar, like, why did we institute the Eucharist and not institute the washing of the feet?
Yeah.
There's a question for you. Imagine if we had to do that every week.
Yeah. I mean, that would be a whole different ballgame, really.
It really would.
Yeah.
Something to think
have
about.
Have you ever had your feet washed at like a prayer service, a church service? Like, have you ever done it in front of an entire parish or has
no.
it always been?
Yeah. No. Like, I think we've done it at similar places.
I've never had my feet washed. No.
Oh, really?
I've done hands. Like, we've done a symbolic hand washing
mm-hmm.
because feet would be creepy.
Yeah. That's a little too gross, but that kind of, like, rips the bones out of it.
Doesn't
it?
I feel like it.
If you're going to wash,
I remember
as well.
Doing the hand washing being like, man, this is like feet washing for pussies.
Although, in this day and age, like, your hands are so fucking filthy.
Right.
Like,
also
like all the germs on your hand. Like, your feet
also
are probably cleaner if you're wearing socks and
right.
shoes.
Yeah,
like,
you
they
actually
are,
have pretty
yeah,
clean.
You've touched so many dirty things
this
with
is,
your hands.
This is a valid point, actually. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because the whole idea of the washing the feet
a
was
microbes.
That the feet would have been so filthy
yeah.
at that time
mm-hmm.
when it was just, you know, sandals and everything was just kind of out
dust
in the open. Yeah.
Yeah.
And for us, that would be hands. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. I feel better now about my ritual that I participated in many years ago.
Your hands were filthy.
Yeah.
Just
but
like
I do,
your soul.
I remember sitting in church once when I was a little kid and they did washing of the feet and I was like, oh my God, I'm terrified of that. Like, I would never want to be up there getting
don't
my feet
touch
washed.
Them.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think for women, as like a lot of women, you know, have their feet pedicured now and then. So it's kind of like your feet are pretty clean.
That's pretty awesome.
You know?
Holy Thursday, when we honor the first of all pedicures.
The pastor is shouting, pick your color! Pick your color!
I like it.
So wrong. I'm not sorry.
Well, speaking of taking beloved Catholic traditions and ruining them, we are currently on Holy Thursday as we record, but this will most likely get posted on Good Friday.
Not so good.
Which is not so good, yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's obviously the day of Jesus's death, and that's when we commemorate that. Again, I don't know that we honor that. Maybe that's closer to.
I think
being
we
honored.
Remember it. Yeah. Well, yeah, I think you're allowed to like.
There's no resurrection
honor his
without
sacrifice.
The death. Yeah, exactly. But it's one of the classic things to do on Good Friday, which is sort of that desperate dark gateway to get to the glory of Easter. Is the Stations of the Cross.
Yeah, that's kind of an every Friday in Lent.
Yeah, actually it is. It's practiced like throughout Lent. Yeah.
Yeah. Fridays are meant to be these like sad days like leading up to
Bad Friday. The Big Bad Friday. Mm-hmm. And I remember when I was a kid going to Catholic school and watching and then participating in the reenactment
the
of the Stations of the Cross. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. You know, and it was always like a big competition. Who was going to play Jesus, you know? And I never pulled it
you
off.
Never
I didn't
got
have
that
the acting
honor?
Chops. No,
oh, yeah.
No. I was a Roman centurion or a Roman guard or something like
fitting.
That.
Fitting.
Yeah. I know. A persecutor of Jesus as opposed
you
to
know,
the man himself.
I've always felt sort of uncomfortable with the dramatizations. Like, I'm an imaginative person, but it's like in my head. Like, I don't...
Right.
I like theater, but like good theater.
Yeah.
Like I'm not really into the outdoor dramatization. I think it's probably like worthwhile for like kids, like learn the story, but like for an observer.
Yeah.
I'm like,
So what you're telling me is you don't love the Stations of the Cross because eighth graders lack the acting chops to pull it off.
Exactly.
Okay.
I would also have supported your choice, their choice not to have you as Jesus. I'm like, nope. Centurion for sure.
Yeah.
You know, just cause
it's weird. It's a weird.
It doesn't. Let's just say it doesn't put me in any prayerful kind of place.
Right. Like it's a strange thing to look at like a junior high student and be like, all right, and so you're going to be Pontius Pilate, and you're going to be the centurion or the soldier that sticks the spear into Jesus's side, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's good for young people, educationally speaking.
Right. Yeah.
I don't think it's prayerfully effective for me.
You're going to be Mary. No pressure. You know, but you're going to be Jesus's mom.
Can you squeeze out some tears?
Right. Yeah.
Let's see them.
Yeah.
All right, so we are talking today, though, about this tradition, the Stations of the Cross.
Yes.
And it's a nice tradition. And
one of the things that I love about Stations of the Cross is that it is, I mean, a lot of the things that I love about the church are the things that are so universal. And the Stations of the Cross, every church you walk into, every country where there is a, you know, Catholic presence, and that's pretty much every country, is going to have some sort of... allusion to the Stations of the Cross. It's practiced more like heavily and intensely in some areas than in others, but it is truly a universal part of the Catholic Church. And I love that.
You know, as you say that, it is a great symbol for the universality of the church because everybody has a version of it, but there are as many versions as there are places, like artistically represented, but also like prayerfully done. Like there's lots of, it's one of those things where actually people do not get up in arms. Like this is the right way to do the Stations. Like you can do it as an examination of conscience. You can do it as a scriptural reflection. You can just do it in community as prayer. Like all the ways are accepted. I feel like this is like a uniting force.
I think it is.
The cross.
I think it is.
And I, you know, when we were talking about doing this, I think that the Stations is something that is a really good representative of what Christianity ought to be.
Yes.
So I think it's good that we can all have common ground.
Well, and I like that you know, so much of, I mean, for good reason, the gospel really focuses on Jesus, right? And you get to know Jesus really well by reading the gospels.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a few other key players kind of along the way, right? Like, you get a little bit of what Mary is into, but not a lot of Mary in the Gospels.
Yeah.
You get some Peter in the Gospels, you know, but like really like Jesus is the star of the show. Whereas in the Stations of the Cross, like Jesus is the main motivator. But what I have found that in my personal practice of the Stations of the Cross is that it's really about the side characters. It's
totally
about who
about
he meets
characters.
Along the way and what do they bring to that journey for him.
Yes.
So I love, you know, kind of the ability to build in an imaginative component of why someone's there, what did they, you know, offer Jesus in that moment of suffering, mm-hmm. you know, because Jesus, like, this is the big task, the big show, and he didn't do it alone. So, like, that's yeah. important to remember.
Yeah. No, I 100% agree that it's about the supporting roles and, like, the perspective of those who are witness.
Yeah, totally.
So it's a good metaphor for the church.
Yeah.
Right?
So what we decided to do with that lovely metaphor for the church was ruin it by church drunking it.
We just said that you're allowed to do stations however you want. Yeah.
We're going back to that Ignatian thing. Imagination. Yes. Imagination.
Oh, my gosh. And, I think it goes up right there.
What we are going to do is we're going to do a little bit of a reflection on the different stations of the cross. There's 14 of them. We actually kind of condensed it down a little bit, and you guys will
there's a lot of falling.
Coming along with that. We'll explain it as we get there. So this is by no means a traditional practice, nor is it going to be as, sort of long as some of the classical stations of the cross practices would be. But we're going to touch on each of the stations, and what we wanted to do was kind of reimagine or bring a little bit of different perspective to what that station is, what it means, maybe a little bit of a modern mm-hmm, context. Mm-hmm. So we'll probably treat each one a little bit differently as we go. But we ended up, flipping a coin, and I got odds and you got evens, which means that I'm starting out with yep. station one. And station one is where Jesus is condemned. So you jump right into the middle of the story.
We praise you, O Lord. Oh, wait.
Yeah, no, we're not doing that.
Oh, okay.
We're not doing
that.
But there's, as you go to all of the Holy Week Masses, and you do Palm Sunday and stuff like that, there's mm-hmm. this whole, entry into Jerusalem. And we talked a few weeks ago about flipping over the tables yes. and all of this stuff that happened that led to Jesus being condemned. But the stations really just start with, guess what? You're going to die. And they're going to send you off. And as I was kind of thinking about what this station would look like in a modern day context, I realized that the stations of the cross would be so much shorter today, because station one would just be like, station one, Jesus gets shot by the cops. Like, game over.
Well, Jesus wasn't, like, black.
Well, he was dark skinned, most likely.
Yeah, right? If he had, like, if he looked very Middle Eastern, he might be.
And he was, the Jews were the occupied minority at the time.
Or he would be condemned
majority, really.
To death. And be put on death row or be in prison. And then there'd be tons of appeals.
Right. It would take forever. Yeah.
And then there would be a podcast that proved that he had been maybe misconstrued.
Yeah, but you
and it would
remember,
take off.
This did not happen according to the legal process of the time, right? This was a middle of the night, slapdash kind
Although,
of like, let's get rid of this guy sort of trial.
Sort of, but because the Sanhedrin were like in cahoots with the Romans. So it wasn't totally
off the books. It wasn't totally off the books. And they did get permission from the Romans to be able to do it. But it was like
His arrest, for sure.
The arrest and the sort of abbreviated trial with the Sanhedrin, stuff like that. I think it's more of a, shoot first, ask questions later kind of a deal that happened to Jesus. So... But regardless, the first station
we digress.
is when the local religious and civil authorities and much of the community looks at Jesus and goes, hey, savior of the world who just wants everybody to love everybody. We fuck you. You're going to die. That's the station one.
Ouch.
Yeah. Right. Not that much fun.
Nope. No. But I think, it starts off condemning us all. So, like, this is a good penitential place to start, right?
Yeah.
Like, we're all guilty.
Everybody was invested kind of in this.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody is complicit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, from station one, Jesus being condemned and or shot by the cops right away.
And this is where it gets... So, imagine the cops were like, take this gun and we want you to hold it for a little while. And then we're going to turn it on you
right.
and pull the trigger.
Yes.
That's what happens because station two is... Jesus carries his cross.
Yes.
So this one is sort of a extra brutal manner. Like, it sort of introduces, like, the idea of torture as being part of it.
Yeah.
Because he has to, like, process with it. Like, they're going to make a big spectacle. And, we can relate to that. Like, humiliation is something that I think most people dread. And once again, as being witnesses too, like, that's going to be really tough to watch, like, somebody suffer for a long time.
Yeah. And it's a strange thing because there's not, it is so demoralizing to say, and dehumanizing to say, take the instrument of your death and carry it to the place where we're going to kill you, right? So carry this gun until we use to kill you. Take this sword, and then we're going to use it against you.
It's particularly brutal and, like, gruesome. I think it's something that we associate with, like, a long time ago. That's how they did things, but... You know, we have torture today.
Totally.
We have people who suffer a long time in different ways, so I think it's...
But the flip side of the coin is that the only time that we really look at the cross as some sort of a burden to bear is in this context of the Stations of the Cross, right? We have to pick up our cross and follow Jesus, but all of that is built around this specific story. And what, you know, everybody wears a cross around their neck, you know, and that's a symbol of, like... love and hope and, like, Jesus is like, yay, Christianity. But it's also, like, I mean, if it happened today, it would be, like, a little mini electrical chair or a little mini, like, injection needle, you know, or something that would be, like, an instrument of, like, death row killing.
Yeah. You know? Well, kind of the traditional take on it is that, like, he accepts it patiently. And, like, you're supposed to look at this and be like, well, if Jesus can accept the instrument of his execution... I can certainly accept my asshole coworkers.
Right.
You know, they are my cross.
If Jesus,
just kidding.
If Jesus can carry his own instrument of death to the top of the hill of the skull and die,
I guess I can
not eat potatoes for one more Friday.
Oh, so close. Your Easter is going to be just like spuds.
Yeah. There's going to be a lot of potatoes going on. Okay. So from station two, Jesus is given the cross. We go to station three, and what happens in the way of the cross is that Jesus falls, like, and the fact that he falls immediately after being given the cross kind of does say something.
That,
like,
sucks.
this is an awful thing that he's been asked to do, and it's only the very beginning of the story. But he falls three times, and so we're going to combine those into one station, and I'll talk a little bit more about those three falls kind of later on as we approach the end of the story instead of right at the very beginning. So,
okay, so you just want to skip over the fall.
Yeah,
right,
so from the first fall, we're just going to jump ahead to the next station.
Okay, so the next station, the fourth one, is Jesus meets his mother. And when I was thinking about, you know, talking about the stations today, I thought this is actually a way that we can see kind of what I think the best of Catholicism is kind of through the lens of the different stations and, like you said earlier, the other players. One thing I think we do well, sometimes we just go a little extreme on it, but better that than nothing, in my opinion, is Honorary Mary.
Yeah.
You know, and women in the church, although we have lots of room for improvement, but we do good with Mary, usually. So looking at her, you know, he meets his mother and how brutal this must have been. Like most of us, you know, have mothers or mother figures and people we can relate to or those nurturing folks who, taking care of us and can empathize with that. So kind of on a double edge, like the church does well to honor Mary and that relationship and the holiness of it. And then we can relate to the
And I've always anguish. Found that particular station gives a better appreciation for the beginning of Mary's story, right? Like she was being asked to not just be the mother of Jesus, but also to follow the story through all the way to the end. She watched him suffer and how, like, tremendously difficult that must have been for her as a mother, you know, like, not just as a disciple, you know, and someone who saw the potential of what Jesus could do, but, like, that's her son, you know? Like, that's a brutal thing that she said yes to from the very beginning.
Right, you know? And, like, there's not a lot written about, like, what communication there was, so you just imagine this moment of, like, connection, like, I see you and you see me and... that transcending moment.
Totally.
So it's a holy glimpse.
Yeah.
All right.
Station five is one of my favorites.
Okay.
Simon of Cyrene is asked to carry the cross for Jesus, with Jesus. Like, Simon is kind of pulled from the crowd and asked to help out because Jesus is not really able to carry on. Remember, Jesus has already been, like, beaten and tortured and all this stuff, and then he has to carry this cross.
He's fallen once.
So the Romans pull Simon out of the crowd, and what I love about this station is kind of like I was saying, like, you can build as much imagination into the moment as you want to. Like, does he, like, volunteer willingly? Probably not. Like, he is a stranger in town. He is not from around there.
Well, but there are lots of theories about Simon.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
So, I mean, that on the one hand, it's like, he's not from there.
Yeah.
He, as far as we know, didn't know Jesus, but like, maybe he had heard of Jesus and that's what brought him
or
to this event.
Or this was his conversion moment. Exactly. I mean,
so
he's listed
all of these
as the father of two people who are named.
Yeah.
So like some scholars say, well, maybe that indicates that they then became part of the like believer
right.
community, the disciple community, or that they already were.
Yeah.
Or maybe he was there because of them. Like, who
yeah.
knows?
But, like, showing up to, like, yeah. be part of the moment is very different than, like, participating in the moment.
Totally. I
and
think
so,
he's the guy, like, don't make eye contact with the teacher.
Exactly.
God damn it.
And that's it.
I'm
like, I think Simon of Cyrene is, like, the patron saint of, like, bitchy, moany ministers. Because that, like, so many times in my life...
Sure.
In ministry, I have been sitting there and been like, nope, 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 not gonna do this. And there's just not really another option presented. Okay, so we just kind of exploded in technical difficulties there. You may have noticed, dear listener. I think we got it sorted out though, but who knows if anything's ever sorted out. Anyway, what I think I was saying, so I think Simon is kind of like a patron saint of, like, people who just don't want anything to do with God, what God is asking them to do,
yeah.
and yet they're, like, pulled into it.
But and they're ministers, like you're saying in this case, and, like,
yeah.
Jesus is on the wall looking at them, being like, hey, I carried my cross, dude. Don't you
right.
want to take up yours?
Yeah. And I,
like, no, that shit's heavy.
No, yeah, exactly. Like, nobody wants that. Like, nobody is, but a lot of times we're asked to do it.
So let's recap here, though. We have St. Gertrude, the patron saint of crazy cat ladies.
Yeah.
And now
yeah.
you have St. Simon of Cyrene of
yeah.
moany, bitchy ministers.
Patron saint of bitchy, moany ministers
mm-hmm.
that just don't want to play the game anymore. And yet there they are carrying the cross. And I think that, like, that, for me, that always makes me think, like, I go back to, like, was this something that he did willingly? Was it something that he did against his will? Did he really have to be, like, pushed into it? You know, like, and so there's a lot
yeah.
of question marks in that crowd, and Simon sort of steps out of those question marks
yeah.
and at the very least just does what's asked of him.
I mean, I like to think that even if he wasn't willing when he got conscripted to help, that Simon became somehow somebody to look up to. Maybe,
yeah.
you know, how many of us start out with something we don't want to do?
Right.
And there's a certain virtue in doing a good job of it anyway.
Yeah.
You know?
It's true.
So,
it's true. So
yeah,
there
Simon.
He is. So Simon is now carrying the cross, station
okay.
five.
And after
that
Simon, another side character, we
yeah.
have Veronica, who wipes the face of Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one is fascinating because we also don't really know who Veronica is.
No clue.
Like,
yeah.
You know, scholars will tell you that there were lots of women in the disciple groups and the
right.
people who were supporting Jesus and following him. So probably,
yeah.
I mean, she's named, which is sort of unusual for
yes.
a woman in the Gospels.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's intimate enough with him that she's going to come up and, you know, physically comfort him. Right.
right.
She's going to wipe his face, which must have been a bloody, sweaty mess.
Must have been.
And create a mythical shroud.
Yes.
To live on in perpetuity.
Right.
Or not.
Right.
Not. I don't believe in the Shroud of Turin.
Okay,
but,
fair enough.
You know, she wipes his face, which is a loving and kind act. Another thing that I think we should be taking from this, from the church, just like with Simon, do a job, even if you don't like to do it.
Yeah.
Comfort people, including their physical things. Like, I think Veronica's a great example to us of, like, physical stuff counts.
Yes.
And I think in terms of, like, the church and service to others, sometimes anybody, people,
right.
are like, well, you know, offer it up, or it doesn't matter as much as you're happy and positive. And I'm
right.
always like, look at the Gospels.
Right.
Like, God, in the form of Jesus, totally cares about people's physical state.
Yes.
Because it matters to us. Your suffering matters. And so
yeah.
I see Veronica doing that reciprocation to Jesus that he did to so many other people,
yeah.
right? Where he's healing people and she's like, I can't heal you, but I will offer you physical comfort. And
yeah.
look how, you know, how beautiful that is
it's
and
a,
how precious.
Yeah, it's a simple act. You know, I mean,
yeah.
I think there's a contrast between Simon, who, like, actually carries the cross, and Veronica, who wipes the face of Jesus as, like, a simple, like you said, just like providing that little bit of human comfort
right.
in that time, doing what she can with what she has to help. And it matters. It's important.
Yeah.
They
yeah.
each get a station, you know, like
right.
Simon, who carries the cross, and Veronica, who just offers that simple act of human kindness, Yeah. They each get a station, you totally. Know, and I think there's something really lovely in that.
Yeah.
That sometimes gets missed. So, that brings us to station 7, which is Jesus falling the second time. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to take the first fall, the second fall, and the third fall, which comes just a couple stations yeah. after this, station 9.
3, 7, 9.
And we're going to kind of lump them all together into Jesus falls a lot. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sometimes Jesus falls down. And that, to me, has always been like the sometimes we all fall down kind right. of message of the Gospels. You know, I mean, if Jesus had just like, because we have to keep in mind sometimes when we talk about Jesus, this is the Son of God, like mm-hmm. walked on water, miraculous healings, all that stuff that, you know, is in the Gospels. And hypothetically could have just grabbed the cross and been like, doot, 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 whistling Dixie all right. the way up to the point where he was going to die and been like, look at me, I'm so strong, not a huge deal, yeah. carrying the cross. But
boom, done.
He yeah. kept falling. He kept struggling yeah. because he's also human. And so right. while he had the option to make, I mean, that and that's what the Garden of Gethsemane is all about, you know, like mm-hmm. he had a choice to say, this isn't really what I want to do, whether it was running away, like as a human running yeah. away from it, or as the Son of God saying, I don't want to do all of this suffering stuff. And he didn't. He really entered into the humanity of that. And he fell down a bunch because he wanted to send a message for all eternity that guess what? Sometimes things are hard mm-hmm. and sometimes you fall down and sometimes you fuck up and you get back up and you keep right. on marching.
And it still sucks.
Yeah.
I think, you know, as you were saying this, I'm like, Jesus was the original lean in. He's like, let me lean yes. into this suffering yeah. and fully embrace it and be present in it. And like, I'm God and I will fall the fuck down and it yes. will hurt and yeah. it will suck to watch, I'm sure. And even worse to get up and
yeah.
have to keep going.
And so, like, I've always kind of broken it down. Like, the first fall was the one that sets the tone that says, like, this is going to be a long, shitty thing that has to happen, right? Because mm-hmm. it's right after he gets the cross.
Yeah.
And then there is the second fall, which is in the middle of it all. And that's always been, like, sort of the most human fall to me because yeah. it's, like, there is this fall that comes right after he's had his face wiped and, you know, he should
and
be
Simon's
refreshed
helping
and ready
him
to go.
Carry it.
Yeah.
Like...
And then there's the last fall, which is just brokenness. It's yeah, just it's, his body has been pushed to the absolute limits. And I think that third fall sends that message that, yeah. like, there is no more that this person can give. And then he's there. He's at the place where it's all going to come to a head. So.
Yeah. But before his third fall.
Right.
He meets the women of Jerusalem. And, like, depending on the reading, right? Like, the holy women. And this is where Jesus is a bit salty.
Yeah.
He has fallen down.
Yeah.
He is probably in his head being like, fuck this. Like, I am not into it anymore. Like, yep. his divinity side is like, really? Like, I don't need this. And his human side is like, ow.
Yes.
And here they are wailing and crying and doing like the public funeral display that like assholes would pay for, you yes. know? And it's just so insincere. And this is where Jesus, the second time that we see a clear demonstration of righteousness, right. everybody, like our first one was the cleansing of the temple.
Mm-hmm.
There's some verbal zingers, but this is really where Jesus is like, no, bitches, you can cry for yourself and for your children because while this is suffering for me, I am rising again and you may or may not.
Yeah.
Like you better start feeling a little sad for yourself. Like it's such a
yes.
harsh thing to say. And yet, you're like, that's right, Jesus. Don't let them take your sass from you.
I love the idea of Jesus, yeah, looking at the holy women and going, listen, bitches.
Just snaps.
Don't cry for me. Yeah.
Simon, hold my cross.
Hold my cross.
So this is also something that we can learn from in the day and yes. be like, you know, for me, it encourages our righteousness. You know, now it had me feeling really bad about righteousness for a minute, but yeah. it's been a couple weeks.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Here's Jesus saying, like, you don't have to, like, you have to carry your cross.
Right.
And you should bear things patiently. But when it's utterly ridiculous and people are crying crocodile tears
right.
while you are on your way to be executed,
yeah.
you can say to them, stop it.
Yes.
Like, get a grip.
Yeah. It is nice. I never thought about that. Like,
yeah.
that he kind of gives permission to have a little bit of a freak out, you know, and be like, listen, people.
Yeah, to be like, this
yeah.
is not cool.
Yeah. Because I always, I like, that's another one. I mean, so many of the messages that I take away from the Stations of the Cross are like, the messages that are supposed to ring for all eternity, right? And so when he says, don't cry for me, cry for your children and your children's children and your children's children's children and your children's 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 children. Like, I mean, yeah. But like, I came into this world with a very simple message. You couldn't handle it. And now you're crying as if it's a big deal, but you had every opportunity to accept it, and your kids won't be able to accept that message, and your kids' kids won't be able to accept that message.
Right.
And generations and generations and generations from now, you're still going to be struggling with the love that I wanted everybody to have.
So that's true, and that's where righteousness feels good. Now, the catch is that he's talking about us.
I know, us.
So yeah. That's the other half of it where you're like, oh, yeah this is also Jesus saying, this is real.
Yeah.
And you're missing the big point.
Right.
So I think it's also a wake-up call for us to be like, if you have gone too far into whatever ridiculousness you have, you are missing the main point.
Yeah.
And you best recenter.
True.
So a harsh wake-up call.
Yeah, it is. It is.
And then Jesus is so exhausted by his calling out of these women that... Yeah.
So
he falls again.
Falls again, right? Falls again, and we've trod that ground that Jesus falls a lot. So we're gonna take two stations now, just for the sake of parody, and combine them into one. So after he falls, he's basically there, right? They set the cross.
Yeah, they've arrived at the place.
Yes, it is time for the event. But before they actually crucify Jesus, or as they're crucifying Jesus, there are two stations that go along there. There is number one. Jesus is stripped of his garments, and the Gospels tell us that they
cast lots
to see who gets to take that cloak home and all that kind of stuff.
Gross.
Which is a weird thing to do.
I think it's just like dick moves.
Yeah. Well, and there's a book, a very old book and a very old movie called The Robe. That
I was wondering if The Robe was going to make an appearance, because guess everyone loves The Robe.
Love
I
it.
Think you can still watch
love
it on
it.
Netflix. So.
You can. Oh, it's such a bad, awesome movie. But yeah, it's the story of one of those soldiers who was there, and it was, he's there, and basically the perspective from the book, which who knows how much research went into this book, full on fiction, but
I thought it was like a first hand account.
It was a, yes, very historical document. But the perspective is that getting crucifixion duty as a Roman, soldier sucked. Like, it's dirty, it's gross, you have to hang out there all day while these people are just in pain and dying. And so they're basically like getting drunk and like trying to while away the hours. And so
casting
lots for the cloak
babysitting
was just kind of like a way to pass the time. And everybody was like wasted trying to like just kind
of
numb
that
kind the of pain
makes sense.
Of being there. Yeah.
Like you can, I mean, not in the like dead crucifixion part, but
right,
like, you
right.
can kind of see that being like, I have this boring job.
Yeah.
Here's a stupid game I play
and
to
they,
make
they're
it
like
go
desensi-
by.
They're either desensitized to like the cruelty of it.
Yeah.
Or they're, you know, trying to distract themselves from the cruelty of it. You know? So anyway, that's a little side note. But it certainly is something that is calls into mind the cruelty of what is about to happen.
Yeah.
And what is about to happen, the next station, is that Jesus gets nailed to the cross.
Yeah.
And that is always one of those things where, like, you just get so hung up on the gruesomeness of it, you know, and I've actually never seen The Passion of the Christ. I didn't really have much interest in watching like Jesus torture porn. But everybody says that it's like very, very graphic in terms of the actual, you know, the torture of Jesus and then the nailing, you know, the nailing to the cross and all that kind of stuff. And then the other perspective on it, though, is very theological in terms of like what's actually holding Jesus on the cross. Like it's not just the nails. It is our own sins. Like, we are the ones who nailed
Your
Jesus
sins
to
are
the cross.
That ugly, cruel thing.
Yeah, so, like, every time that you do something wrong, you swing the hammer, you know? Like, and that's just a guilt that I can't live with. And yet, you know, Lent time, Stations of the Cross, I take a moment at that station to recognize, like, yes, yeah, that's been me too, you know? Like, I need to understand that.
Yeah, you know, I remember, like, as a little kid, seeing in, like, one of those, like, illustrated Bibles that and being, like, pretty freaked out about it.
Yeah.
It is one of those really gruesome images. And you're right about the theological perspective, but I think even the physical perspective of, like, how horrible this was.
Right.
Like, it's something we need to sort of viscerally feel.
Yeah.
Because it's easy to be like... Yeah, Jesus suffered for us, then he resurrected, and, you know, yay, heaven. But, like, no, like, that was awful.
Yeah. And what pisses me off is when you drive through, you know, middle America, and you see, like, the billboards with the nail in the hand that say, like, he died for your sins. And it's like, no, he died for our sins. Yeah. Like, you cannot exclude yourself from that. Even if you feel like you have been saved and you feel like you are no longer participating in that crucifixion event, you'd rather participate in the resurrection. Yeah. Nobody's perfect.
Well, and in this time in the world, not that the world's ever been devoid of cruelty or horrors, I think it calls to mind, like, you know, God suffered horrors and is still suffering horrors because of our sinfulness, our structural sin, our societal sin, whatever. Totally. It's something that's still going on. I think there's plenty of news stories where, like, oh, like, I don't want to read that. I don't want to hear that. And, like, that's how it was back then, too.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So... this is the part where it's really dark and everybody's quiet.
Jesus has been stripped and been nailed and been put up there for the whole world to see.
And his friends are watching and it's all awful and boohoo.
And we're at station 12, I believe.
And Jesus dies on the cross, Jesus this point somewhat seems a bit of a mercy.
Right. Yeah.
And in fact, there's like the little bits before where, like, you know, maybe somebody stabs him or holds up some wine or
it happened quickly. Usually it would take a long time and Jesus would not have been able to be taken down the same day that he was put on the cross. It would be a
days long process. Pause right there. Like, can you imagine that? No. Like, we know a lot of cultures did sort of extended death, you know, executions where people were like up to be an example for a long time in various ways. And that's just another whole horrific mind blow. But so he dies on the cross, and depending on which gospel you ask. Now, this is where I get, like, sort of theologically interested, because I'm like, you know, each gospel has a different statement that Jesus would say, and it really is revealing. And I like that we have the differences to ponder. You know, we have John, where Jesus is like, and scene. Like, I am ready, Lord. I come.
Right.
And then we have other, you know, Mark in his desperation.
Yeah.
You know, in that still anguish. Why have you forsaken me?
Right.
Which I think is the correct one since we have an Aramaic insertion there. I will go with the scholars. But
look at that.
But they're
dropping some knowledge.
Oh, yes. Yes. Well, we should try at least to have a little. But it doesn't really matter because I think he felt all of them. You know, like part of him was like, I know the greater purpose and I am aware of it. And I do believe he was. And then the other part was like, ouch.
Right. Yeah.
Like, let me out of this.
Yeah.
You know? So I think I actually do like that as Catholics. We tend to kind of focus on that, on Jesus on the cross and Jesus' death, because we all experience that.
Right.
And so there is that sense of empathy. And when there is very little comfort in the world, I think that is a real comfort for people of faith to say that God knows exactly what it's like for you sometimes.
God knows what it is to die.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's not a religious belief that spans that's one of the things that's very unique about the Christian faith, is that we have a God who not only knew what it was to live, but also knows what it is to die.
To be wounded and to be humiliated. And I mean, that's there's a power in that vulnerability.
For sure. For sure.
So that's a comfort.
Yeah.
Or, you know, a horror, but either way.
Yes, it's a horrible comfort or comfortable horror. Jesus has died surprisingly quickly. And then at the 13th station, his friends, like, skadoodle to go try to get him down off the cross.
Yes.
And
St. Joseph of Arimathea.
St. Joseph of Arimathea, yes. St. Joseph of Arimathea. Provides the tomb that comes next. But yeah, they kind of are scrambling because they want to try and get him off the cross and do as much of the burial rites as they can before the sun goes down and they have to stop working.
Basically. Right. So this is the high holy days. Like if you're going to break a Sabbath, you're certainly not breaking this Sabbath during the year. And I think St. Joseph of Arimathea helped to get the body down.
Yeah.
Yeah. He had to help.
Traditionally, he is one
who's, you know, there was no
to be there.
Israelite women asking for that.
Right.
So
there was this moment of going and kind of, I look at it now, going back to station one where Jesus is shot by the cops. This is sort of almost the social activism that comes out of that. Like there is this moment of a little bit of defiance where they're saying, like, we're not just going to leave him there. We are going to...
This is your righteous protest.
Right. Like, this is our faith. This is our tradition. Mm-hmm. And we have the right to go and get him down and get him into a tomb as quickly as we can. We're not going to abandon him.
Right. You got to choose his death, but that is not the whole story of him. Exactly. He matters in a different way.
So, I mean, in a lot of ways, I think of it as the resurrection starts at that moment. Oh. Like, the ongoing life of Jesus is beginning as soon as the people who loved him make it a top priority to get him down off the cross and say, that's not the end of the story.
Well, and traditionally he's, you know, placed in the arms of his mother, Mary.
Right.
And that's kind of like this, you know, wrenching full circle where, you know, mother's out living her child, but also, you know, she met him earlier in the story and here she is faithfully till the end.
Yeah.
Once again, like women showing up to do the dirty work of bathing a body. And, you know, St. Joseph of Arimathea did provide a lovely grave. The women were there.
So they're there, they get him off the cross.
And then they lay him in the tomb.
14th station.
Yeah.
The end of the stations of the cross.
Right.
Which is kind of weird, but.
Well, because we're in preparation.
Right.
Like, they want you to put that stone in front of the tomb and leave it there for a full day.
Yes.
So, but they lay him in the tomb, which is kind of a nice end cap. Like, it's supposed to, like, I think, be a little bit of peace at the end of this.
Because
that is where he, you know, Judaically should be.
Right.
And it's the Sabbath, and he gets to rest.
Yes.
And so there he is. I think it's an interesting one because, you know, in the older traditions, it's like he goes down to Sheol where everybody's asleep and, like, wakes him up.
Right, right.
Or who knows? It's just a little pause.
Something is going to happen in that tomb or outside of that tomb or somewhere.
Right.
But that, I mean, the tomb becomes a very potent symbol.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as Jesus is there, and when we know what the end of that story is going to be, that the tomb will eventually be empty, putting Jesus in the tomb is a very symbolic act. I mean, both at the time it was a very symbolic act, and also now that we know the story, it's a very symbolic act.
Yeah, and I think that time in the tomb sort of represents, like, desolation a little bit for those who are around. Once again, if we're viewing from everybody else's perspective, you know, to have to leave his dead body there and be like, dang, like, he's actually dead.
Right.
And did we just see that and do that and
to be a follower of Jesus and believe that Jesus was the Son of God, the Messiah, somebody super duper special.
Yeah.
And then he died before really doing what you thought was he was gonna
do. Right, and depending on which timeline you know you believe or whatever, like going to have like the most awful, you know, Seder you've ever had.
Totally.
To be like, you know, is Elijah coming back? Like, not today. You know, like it's awful.
Drinking your distilled bitter herbs.
You have extra bitter herbs that night. I think it does represent kind of that time when you think everything's lost.
Yeah.
And so the dark. It's darkest before the dawn.
It is darkest before the dawn.
Sometimes.
Said Florence and the Machine.
The darkest night is when you can see the brightest stars.
Oh, yeah. Way to go. Mm. Uh-huh. And sometimes the light at the end of the tunnel is an oncoming train.
And here's where we get to guess. Are you going to talk about the resurrection, which you doubt, you heathen?
I don't doubt the resurrection. I just don't know if it's real or not. I think the resurrection starts when his friends take him off the cross. I think the resurrection begins when people start to live the life of Jesus on their own. I think that's the next life of Jesus, whether the tomb is ever officially emptied out or not. Don't get me started, Diz.
I understood that you were laying this heathen groundwork the moment you said, the resurrection starts when you take him off the cross.
I wasn't. I was going to let it go. I was going to stations of the cross and then say, and then Jesus magically rises from the dead and everybody's happy.
In some traditions.
40 days later, you're going to fly to heaven on a cloud.
Okay, well, we're not talking about the ascension. But I'm just saying, if you're going to believe the story, you might as well believe the best part.
Yeah, no, I know. And I do. I just don't necessarily know if it happened the way that every other Christian on earth thinks that it does.
You know what? That's fair. Sure. As long as you think that maybe it happened for reals.
I think that because of the resurrection,
Jesus
is present right now in our tiny makeshift broadcasting studio. And that means that we get to participate in being disciples of Jesus in a way that even the apostles didn't understand.
Well, I will toast to that.
Yeah.
So happy almost resurrection.
Happy almost resurrection. There is a 15th station. It's a happy ending story.
Yeah.
But with Good Friday, you get stuck in the tomb. And you gotta sit for a day.
Yeah, you gotta sit. Jesus is reposed. So it's like, you know, fun Catholic trivia. Like the only day where there's supposed to be no Mass.
No Mass.
Yeah. At all.
Yeah.
Because Jesus is dead. Yeah. That's what you get. That's what no you crackers.
Get. You get no crackers on Good Friday. Yeah, no, but it is, it's an interesting day in the church. It's not a holy day of obligation, and then in fact it couldn't be because there's no Mass. And I think people who, you know, I mean, most people work, right? It's not like, it's not like some sort of day
off. Go watch
off.
The 8th graders flog each other.
Right, yeah.
Whatever they're going
to
do.
To watch. That's, nope, not going down that road. Okay.
Well, that's what they do at the parish. They walk around, they scourge, pretend Jesus.
8th graders flogging each other.
Well, you know it's always an 8th grader who's like Jesus.
It is, yeah.
Imagine if they did do like a 1st graders.
little baby Jesus.
Oh, little baby Jesus. So wrong.
It's a weird day in the church, and it's an interesting day to be a Christian, because around the world there are processions and there is practices of prayer and there's people kind of wailing in the streets with the idea that, like, you get it all out of your system now because there's going to be some joy, like, just around the bend. Like,
yes. And enter if the darkness. Done so the Lenten darkness right, then your Easter joy should be even more joyful.
Exactly.
So celebrative.
Yes.
You can say the A word.
You can, yeah.
Just shout it from the rooftops. Nope, another one.
I know. So, the Easter celebration is just around the corner. And we wish you all a very, very just solemn Good Friday and a very, very joyful Easter.
Yes, and a big pause on Saturday.
Yeah. So
happy Easter. Thanks for listening along with us for whatever thing we might call these quote-unquote seasons. It's been a year plus. Our second round of Lenten on Church Drunk.
Yeah, yeah.
And we'd love to hear, do you pray the Stations? Do you think they're relevant? Can you do something else?
What would your Stations of the Cross look like? Hit us up. Also,
Guess has done his annual, and one of my favorite things that you do is put together a lovely playlist for Lent. Yeah,
Stations of the Cross playlist is up and live. So if you're listening to this and you just need more Stations of the Cross, go to the blog, check it out. There's a link to the Spotify list if you want to do that, or you can just listen to them right off of the website. Nice.
Churchdrunk.com.
Email us.
Tell us your favorite one on the list. You can tweet at Guess at
ChurchDrunkPod.
That's email me. Us.
ChurchDrunk@gmail.com.
Or, you know, whatever. Leave a comment on the blog.
Yeah. Happy almost Easter.
Hey, almost.
Yeah. And we'll be back next week with an Easter-ish episode. Is it going to be on Friday? Who knows? Because
nobody
it's not
going to
be Lent anymore. And we have no restrictions on
Fridays.
I mean, we'll
probably just be blacked out the whole week.
Yeah.
That's how Jesus celebrated.
Spring break!
Nobody can even recognize him.
I know, right? Well,
church.
That is it for this episode. We will catch you during the Easter season. And thanks for listening to Church Drunk, where the Via Dolorosa is right next to the Via de la Rose.
Whoa.
Watch out. They're pronounced very similarly. Have a lovely Easter, everybody.
Peace.